My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. How often have you mused about your career or non-career, your relationships or perceived lack of relationships, or those things you felt missing from your life and thought, when this happens, I will be happy? Well, my guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Kyle Cease, said he came to the realization after 25 years of building a headlining comedy and acting career that "when this happens, I will be happy" is a complete lie. He quit his stand-up career and had a transformation of his life. Kyle is a keynote speaker, transforming audiences through his unique blend of comedy and transformation. He's been a guest speaker at colleges, summits, and Fortune 500 conferences, including Agape International, GATE, Revelations, Sun Valley Wellness Festival, Sedona World Wisdom Days, and the Longevity Now Conference, among others. In addition to leading his own Evolving Out Loud live events, he's spoken with renowned teachers such as Eckhart Tolle, Jim Carrey, Michael Beckwith, Louis C.K., Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra, Bob Proctor, David Wolfe, and thousands more. He actually said if Eckhart Tolle and Jim Carrey had a baby, that baby would be Kyle Cease. Prior to being a transformative speaker, Kyle was a headlining comedian for 25 years with two number one Comedy Central specials. In 2009, he earned a number one ranking on the network's Stand Up Showdown. He's been in more than 100 different television and movies, including 10 Things I Hate About You, Not Another Teen Movie, The Jimmy Kimmel Show, Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, Chelsea Lately, Martin Short Show, Comics Unleashed, and numerous VH1 shows. And he joins us this evening to share his brand new book, I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Kyle Cease. Good evening, Kyle.
Wow, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I whenever someone introduces me like that, I don't even know. Like, all I can think of to the audience is just lower your expectations. Like, we gotta level the playing field now. No, that was very, very nice. Thank you for that. That's amazing. You make me feel like I'm doing something.
Well, you are doing something. You're doing something great, and you're doing it both with humor and real humanity. And I think that's something that we could desperately use in our world today, is that the need to laugh, the gift of laughter, but also the gift of being human. And I think so many of us try not to be for some reason or another, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because for years, you know, I was a stand-up comic, and then I shifted into the transformation world, and what I discovered was in comedy, a lot of times comedy is being cynical about life, right? You're making fun of what is. And so there was kind of a darkness often attached to comedy. So you'd be very skeptical about life and you'd make fun of it. And then you go to the transformation world and you're totally accepting the world and everything is totally possible, but it's not funny. And yeah. So for me, I was kind of like, we need a balance between lazy and crazy. Like, I love the idea of comedy and transformation combining, because I used to go to transformational events where they'd have you, you know, sit under a tree for 7 days, and I would make a joke and they'd stop everything and be like, please, we're trying to be happy. I'm like, I know, but that's why I made the joke. And they're like, please, we have a 6-day process where we need to bring up every horrible thing that happened so we can release it. Does everybody have their weird necklaces? You know, so I found that comedy kind of just also gets you right in the moment. You know, we're supposed to have fun and play too at the same time. It's like, take yourself much more seriously and much less seriously at the exact same time.
I had the gift of actually, during my spiritual growth and spurt in my late 30s, of going to many retreats at a Zen monastery. And you would think that humor at a Zen monastery would be absent, but I actually would do stand up for the Zendo, for the for the head monk and all the abbots there, and then get hysterical over some of the stuff that we would do. So anyway, I understand your comedy career started at age 12. What was your motivation at the time?
Well, I mean, I started in second grade, actually. I was goofing off in the class and taking the attention from the teacher. And the teacher finally just made a deal with me that if I would be quiet, she'd give me 5 minutes at the end of the week to do stand-up. And at that age, at that time, my uncle was the prop man for a famous 80s comedian named Gallagher. And he made almost all of his props and toys. And so I was really into stand-up. I was more obsessed with stand-up than what kids were usually into. I didn't watch cartoons or anything other than comedy. And I started doing Gallagher's material for the second graders, which was really funny because I didn't get anything. I was talking about sex and taxes with a Southern accent. And I would be like, "Men, are you with me?" You know, like I'm sitting here, "Women, you go out shopping, you buy us underwear that fits cardboard. Am I right, guy?" I'm talking to second graders, right? And
were you smashing pumpkins also?
Well, we were all smaller, so to put things to scale, I would smash grapes with a tack hammer. So I had to make the fruit to scale. But it was funny because every year I would keep doing that. I would negotiate with the teachers, can I do some type of entertainment in front of the class each week? And then started doing open mics in early junior high at comedy clubs and really hitting. And one thing that was really cool about it was I was doing it before I had developed fear, like before I had developed the egoic, what if I do it wrong voice that we all have. And it was just a given to me that this was normal and it was a part of me. And I liked being funny in the class and I liked getting laughs. I don't think there was a feeling better than getting laughs. It's just the weirdest thing that you can say something and the whole room turns to you and gets completely present. You know, when you're laughing, you're only thinking in the moment. You look at your friend and you connect when you're watching a sitcom and you're not thinking of your taxes coming up or, you know, different problems in your life. You can't laugh and not be in the moment. And so for me, I just felt the greatest feeling when you got a laugh. When I first walked into a comedy club, I just couldn't believe that this existed, this place where people went and enjoyed themselves. And I just was obsessed with it. It was just a part of my body. I'll never forget the first comedy club I walked into and how I felt in my body. And I think we have that feeling with all kinds of different things. And we've just trained ourselves now to ignore it. But it's the most important feeling in the world. And that feeling to me is a preview. You know, if you feel like maybe I should go to Italy or start writing a book or start a band or let go of this job I don't like, you feel it in your body. Yeah. And that feeling is a preview. It's saying when you go do this, you'll always feel this way.
So you never had that feeling that many people have in the comedy field, that your success or failure was predicated on making people laugh.
I think that specific thought didn't occur to me because I was so fascinated by watching stand up, and I also was a musician too. I played four instruments and sang, and I think I just heard comedy timing when I watched comedians as a child, and I just understood without realizing it till later. People would say, "Wow, that delivery or that pacing," and I didn't think of it on that technical side. It just was natural to me to understand. You say it into a microphone, and within a few seconds, they're laughing, and you learn how to pause for a beat, not in a technical aspect, but your body just picked it up because as I was only watching comedy, that was what they did. So it was like learning a language by living in that country, you know? And so it was just a second nature thing for me.
It's interesting. I've never thought of comedy the same way that you're describing music, because music, as we know, is based on mathematics, and timing in comedy, obviously now that you're saying it, is based on mathematics.
Sure. There's a feeling that, eventually, it's almost like not in a negative way, but a control you have over the audience, where there's like a way that you know that you can lean forward on a joke, or you say one thing a little bit louder, or you create a pause in a certain way, or if you fake a mistake and create the illusion of spontaneity and then go with that, so they think you're in a spot. I mean, there's so and also truly by being truly spontaneous too. What I really believe is that when we discover that we are the moment, it constantly wants to express itself through you with that type of timing. Mm. And it naturally knows the timing way better than figuring out how do I get that kind of timing. There's all these seminars out there. And there's all these different things where they teach you, I'm going to show you how to create a business and how to do this. And if you hear how to do it, you're just doing what they did. And you're not bringing what's unique about you. And that would be like you learning how to write a song from Michael Jackson. And he just says, write Billie Jean. That's what I did. Then you're not writing what you feel, but what we really need to learn is what we naturally have inside of ourselves that show up when we stop trying to do things on a technical way, but learn how to listen to what our body wants, because it wants to unfold something magic all the time, and we never hear it because we're so busy trying to be like everyone else.
Yeah, in your book, I hope I screw this up, you talked about that feeling of excitement when you get a thought or an idea that you know you have to pursue.
Yes. And I actually have kind of a magical story about that, that I don't know if you need to go to break, but I can tell you after it on how I actually discovered that feeling and how it transformed every aspect of my life, my career, my impact, my health, my relationships, my income. Everything just naturally changed from following the highest excitement feeling in my body.
Let's share that excitement thought as we take a break. My guest this evening is Kyle Cease. He's the author of I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. And we'll be back with Kyle after these messages on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on Om Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
I'm Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on Om Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening is Kyle Cease. He's the author of the new book, I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. Kyle, before the break, you were talking about this feeling of excitement that can, it's palpable, it's in their gut, and you can sense it when you have a thought and you know that's a thought you must pursue. Go ahead and give us an example. You can just give that.
Well, one thing I think we have is a voice that we've had in us for years that just tells you, and that voice can only tell you the next step. It can't tell you the entire thing. That would be like a GPS telling you the next 20 directions versus the next turn. And the way that a GPS works is it tells you the next turn, and it can't tell you more information until you do it. And we all have that one same feeling in our body that just tells us the next step. It's the voice that says, ask that person out, or leave this company, or go to an island right now, or start writing a book, or whatever. It's just the next step. So we have this feeling, and when you hear that voice, you almost always can feel it in your a deeper place in your body.
Have you been listening to my thoughts?
This is how I found it out. It was inside of your mind. But there's so there's this first voice that's almost like if you worked in an office for 20 years and there's an elevator that you've never gotten on, eventually you'd ignore and forget that the elevator's even there. And what I want to do is go, what's that elevator go to? You'd probably be like, oh, it doesn't, I don't even know if it works, it's just there. But there's that elevator takes you to different floors. And it's something we're used to ignoring and just staying in the same level in our minds. But we can feel in our body this feeling that says something like, go do that next thing. And what we don't understand is that feeling that's showing up is a preview. It's saying, when you do this, you'll always feel this way. And we have two voices. I really believe we have two voices. There's a first voice that shows up and it says, go do that thing. And it feels good. And it can't tell you why you should do it because you've never done it. It doesn't have any mental evidence. But what we've done is we've trained ourselves to ignore the feeling in our body and go to a second voice of why we shouldn't. That's really in our mind. You can almost feel it in your head, but it comes up with the stupidest reason why. So you could be in a job that doesn't sustain your heart. It doesn't feel good. And you'll feel your body go, what if we just left this company? And it can't tell you why because you've never done it. But then we ignore that and your mind shows up and goes, yeah, but if we do, it comes with the stupidest reason. It's like, yeah, but if we do, we can't go to the Cheesecake Factory party next Thursday. And the first voice can't tell you this, but it's like, if you'd learn to listen to me, you'll own all the Cheesecake Factories in a month and you could make them all vegan if you wanted. And the second voice is like, yeah, but they have those Thai lettuce wraps and I don't want to miss out on that. If anyone listening has ever stayed in a relationship that you don't like because you know that eventually the two of you are going to go camping, you know what I'm talking about. Like, every one of us is like, we've had that time where we're like, I really don't like this relationship or this job I'm in or whatever. I don't like this relationship, but you know what? Thanksgiving's in 3 months, so I'm not going to end it. I'm going to stay in this place with this person I don't like, and then go through the holidays with the person I don't like. And we always create this later thing, and we don't listen to what the body says. So for me, I've trained myself more and more that I've learned that that feeling in my body is fully authentic and accurate, and it's never, ever, ever been wrong, ever. Mm. And so I had one time, for instance, we were doing 200-seat theaters. We do this insane event called Evolving Out Loud. It's a two-day event that I do where I show up and I start talking and I have no idea what I'm going to say. And it goes from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. for 2 days in a row. And the mind goes, that sounds crazy. But if you've ever given someone advice and then you learn from the advice that you gave, that means there's two of you. In fact, sometimes you'll give someone advice they aren't even asking. They'll go, I have a stomach ache, and you'll be like, I think you should break up with her. And they're like, I'm single. And you go, okay, I must be talking to me. If you've ever given someone very passionate advice and then you learn from the advice that you gave, that means that there's two of you. So Evolving Out Loud is me talking from my heart to the audience about what I need to hear. And then I find my ego adjusting to the notes that I just gave. And you actually watch me transform throughout the weekend. And I speak from my heart. So the entire audience leaves from their egoic fear-based place and they go into their heart. And so we do these two-day events, and one day we were doing 200-seat theaters, and we finished an event one weekend, and one of my teammates, Dan McKim, said to me, he goes, what do you really want to do? And I said, I want to do like a 2,000-seat theater. And I felt that in my body. It was very exciting. But my mind immediately came up with, yeah, but it's been hard to fill a 200-seat theater. How could you fill a 2,000-seater, right? I actually felt my body split into two. I felt one on the left side, my body is going, I want to do this thing. And on the right side, my head is going, yeah, but I can't because of this. And I believe that's the moment where you, whatever action you take causes the other way to go away. So if you have an opportunity show up that's a calling and you step into it, the fear goes away. If you come up with a fear-based reason why you shouldn't and you go with what the fear says, the opportunity goes away. So whatever you do, whatever action you take causes you to either be more in your body and more in your power or more in your head and more in your fear based on what action you take. So when I said, I want to do a 2,000 seat theater, I felt it in my body. But my mind said, yeah, but it would cost us too much money. We don't know how to do it. We don't have a big enough fan base. And so I said, let's still go for it. And the second I said, let's go for it, I felt myself step into my body more. It was more exciting. And right after that, I had this idea where we have in LA a public-funded radio station like PBS, but for radio out here. It's called KPFK. And I just had this concept show up where I said, what if I donate 1,000 tickets to them and let them keep the money from that? And that felt very effortless and very exciting to me. But on one hand, and then my mind went, yeah, but you won't have enough money to take care of the theater. So once again, my body split into two. So I said, let's do it. I'm going to donate 1,000 tickets to KPFK. So I texted KPFK's program manager and said, I'm going to donate 1,000 tickets to you. And they texted me back with, well, then we're going to give you your own radio show.
Wow.
Now, here's the thing. That really excited feeling includes a lot of amazing specific things that you can't see that it's trying to give you. And your job is to follow the feeling and prove to yourself that you're in the alignment and ready for the magic that's going to happen by stepping into it. So in other words, if you're in a relationship you're not happy with, you are only saying to yourself, I'm holding on to this because I don't believe that I'm safe. It's not until I let go of this that I prove to myself that I'm safe. But if you're holding on to something that doesn't feel good, you're saying to yourself, I'm not safe. And life throws you as many problems as possible because you're saying to yourself, I'm out of my alignment. And so when we said yes to the theater and then the radio show, they said, okay, yeah, we'll donate tickets. We'll put you on the air and we'll fill the room for you. The 2,000-seat theater that we went after took too long to get back to us, so I took that as a red light from the universe on that specific theater. And we found another theater that was 1,400 seats that was way, way, way cheaper and said, we'll do it. And so for very cheap, we got this theater, and immediately 1,000 seats were already filled, so our job suddenly became to fill 400 more seats. And here's the most ironic thing. It was so much easier to fill a giant theater than a small one because we were so excited about it. Mm. And our excitement made us want to tell every person about it, made us have a confidence in our pitch about it, made us really realize the impact that it's having and come from this place of knowing that we're infinite. And it was easier and faster to fill the 400 seats left than it was to fill the 200 seats before because we were so passionate.
What you're talking about, what you're describing to me is intuitive and natural and spiritual marketing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so funny how much, you know, people go to learn to market and they learn to do all these things. But what we don't understand is when we step into our highest excitement, it will market itself. It will make a video that suddenly gets 100 million views and fills the room naturally on its own. You talk from a passion that's so high that you talk from your heart, and the people listening have to bypass their own fear and go to their heart to hear you. And when anyone hears you speak from your heart and they go into their heart, they immediately want to co-create with you or work with you because the highest asset we have is our connection to ourselves. People think the highest asset they have is money. But the highest connection you have with yourself can help you make more money, which doesn't matter anyway. But you also lose a ton of money spending on addictions and stuff because you're in your element and your highest thing you have is your highest excitement in the moment. And when you're in that, you don't need a bunch of addictions. You don't need a basement full of crap that you have to keep paying for storage. You don't need to keep holding on to things that don't sustain you or fulfill you. And you start to let go of the weight of the things that you can't control. And you step into this power that constantly moves exponentially faster and faster and takes care of itself on a level that we have no idea exists until we step into it. Is that making sense?
Absolutely. And what do you do with the naysayers who are around us all the time? The people who say, you know what, great idea, but you can't do that.
Well, one thing is that I'm not invested in what anyone else gets out of it. It sounds kind of funny, but it's like if an apple tree was about to make apples and it thought, how many apples will I sell? It would actually screw up its ability to make apples. If an apple tree was going to make apples and it was like, what if people don't like apples? Or what if I, you know, there's already a pear tree doing it. An apple tree wouldn't make apples. My job is just to make apples, and it's up to the world who wants to align with those apples. But if I'm here trying to get a giant mainstream audience and I'm thinking of that first, then I'm suddenly have to shrink to what everyone would love and I'd become vanilla. But if I actually speak from my heart, you get to a place where people either love or hate you. But that's better than living in a world where they can give or take you, because everyone who's ever been impactful was also often violently hated by the rest of the world. But what's even weirder is I find the more I step in my power, the more my truth comes through. And most people that are speaking from a place of hate are scared of their own truth. So the deeper I go, the less naysayers I have in my life. But I'm not here to control what people think. I'm here to give my gift, and it's none of my business what people think of me, because that includes their childhood, their past, their life, their own resistance to themselves. And it's totally their call if they want to ignore the idea that they're an infinite being. But for me, it's not as fun.
My guest this evening is Kyle Cease. He's the author of the brand new book, I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. Kyle, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and also about your appearances and your Evolving Out Loud presentations in May.
Thank you. Well, the book, I'm really excited to say, is doing incredibly well. I know it's everywhere. You can get it in Barnes & Noble and Amazon. But it's really flying right now, and it's really exciting to feel this movement happening. But you can get it anywhere. You can go to my website too. You can also get a movie that's 2 hours for free off of my website at kylecease.com/book. And they can go there and get a free 2-hour download if they just type in their Amazon or Barnes & Noble number into the website.
Kyle's going to be appearing Friday, May 19th at 8 p.m. doing his Evolving Out Loud at the Seattle Moore Theater in Seattle, and May 27th and 28th in Los Angeles at the Alex Theater in Glendale, California. And we'll be back with more of Kyle, and I hope I screw this up, after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening is Kyle Cease. He's the author of the best-selling brand new book, I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. Kyle, just before the break, we were talking about the naysayers and how you don't have to resonate to those naysayers and move on. But there seems to be a tendency in many of us when facing something new or exciting, even if we have that feeling of excitement, that there's a tendency to catastrophize and fear the worst possible outcomes. What do we do about that?
Well, one is that we think a worst possible outcome is a legitimate thing. like that there's any legitimacy in that something bad can happen. The only thing that we perceive as bad is just an external thing. So in other words, for instance, one of the reasons I believe that we stress at all is that we try to control things that we can't control, and we don't control what we can. So we can't control what a football team did, for instance. There's people at home that yell at their TV because a group of men, not really from that city, just lost to another group of men, not really from that city. And people love to find a reason to stress about something that they can't control. Politics, for example, our past, what someone said about us. And I totally put what people think about me in the category of something I can't control. So it's not my job to put it there. Now, most of us think that who we are our circumstances. So what we do is we live our life trying to spin as many plates as possible. Like we're plate spinners. Like I got my plate spinning here of a good relationship. I have my plate spinning here of, you know, a good career. I have the plate spinning of enough money. And then we actually think who we are the plates, but we forget that we're the plate spinner. And if we're going to step into our gift, our fear is these plates might fall over. In other words, what if you really feel a calling to do something absolutely amazing with your talent or the skills that you have, or you feel this calling to write a book? Immediately your mind might go, well, this plate might fall down of my job. Yeah, it might. But you don't know what you're losing by not doing this. In other words, the biggest reason that we stress is our mind, when we're about to let go of something, your mind can only measure what you will lose, and it can never measure what you will gain. So people are so good at finding the reason to focus on what's wrong and don't see what they're missing out on by holding on to the thing that doesn't fulfill them. So if you're going through a bad breakup and you're sad about it, that's because you're focused on the loss of one person versus the gain of 7.4 billion people if you're bisexual and willing to date everybody. So we are focused on what we're losing. And I realize that every time I step into my gift, I'm about to learn what I will gain by hearing the calling. Now, I've had many opportunities show up for ridiculous high-paying clients, for instance, but they didn't feel like they aligned with us. In other words, like they would want something from us that wasn't what I'm trying to give, or they would be more demanding, but they'd try to offer us a really big check. But I can feel in my body that they feel heavy. I can feel that feeling that going into that might not be my highest calling. So if I honor that and I honor what they want, then I'm actually saying that money is more important than my calling. Money is more important than my truth. But if I actually honor what my truth is and say this feeling is more true to me than the check, then I'm saying my truth is more important. And that's what really creates that Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Oprah part of us. That weirdly, we don't even understand money will be a total byproduct of that. But if you are doing something because you'll get something versus it's a calling, you're saying my desire for that thing is bigger than my truth. And we live in a world where it's just totally normal to live that way. But our problem is that we are ignoring what the magic is that's trying to unfold from us when we step into our amazing powers and our truth and our body, including getting less sick, including, you know, you're stressing less because you're not taking on things that you don't like. You're moving with the flow of what you are. And you can work 12-hour days, but it's passion that excites you versus working 12-hour days against the grain of what you're here to do and be. So, yeah, a lot of things can fall over and things can go wrong, but we don't know how much stuff is going wrong all day because we're not stepping into what we're here to do and saying yes to the feeling in our body.
What's fascinating to me is that every time I've ever had that fear going into an unknown situation, when I've come out on the other side and look back, I recognize how that fear was just misgiven and how everything worked out perfectly because I was in the stream of the energy of the thing.
Right. And you know what that fear is? This is really what that fear is. When we were kids, we actually got love from our parents for being small or being, you know, think about this. If you and I went to another planet and we were raised by two 20-foot tall aliens for 20 years and they barely spoke English or whatever.
You met my family.
Yeah, exactly. But if we were raised there, one of them, let's say, comes home drunk and he's yelling, right? You start to realize, I better not speak out or I'm going to get abandoned or hurt. And maybe another alien really likes it when you tap dance. right? So when you tap dance, this alien's like, oh, he's showing all this alien, showing the other aliens. Look. So for 20 years, you start to learn, okay, I'm going to stay small and I'm going to tap dance more frequently. And then you go off to the planet or whatever your thing is, right? And then you go off to the rest of the planet and you see all these new aliens and you start tap dancing for them and you don't speak out. And those ones are like, I hate tap dancing. And we don't realize that we've created a conditioning that basically thinks that who we are is what our parents think of us. And we end up being what we were when we were kids. And we're scared to let go of that story because we don't understand that that story is a lie. So the fear that shows up is us being scared to let go of the BS story that we aren't. But it's really also exciting because it's the birth of what you actually are. So the old story needs to fall away, and your nervous system is just scared of anything that you've never done. And so even asking someone out seems like life or death to your nervous system, or creating a new company or following that calling. But that feeling says you're going to be safe, trust me, and watch your nervous system readjust seconds after you step into the thing, because it'll see that it's still safe no matter what.
Can everybody feel that feeling?
I believe so. I believe that some people are more I think that some of us have had different things that have caused us to block it more. But I've learned for me, you know, and by the way, I do also want people to know I'm speaking to people who do feel that feeling. There's no way that someone who's listened to the show this far doesn't know what I'm talking about. But I do believe that there's several different stages. Like there's the baby chick in the shell stage. So if you think who you are is the shell, and someone like me talks and says you're even more infinite, that might be scary to the shell, because I'm cracking a hole in your shell and you might not know that there's more than the story of your shell. So this is death to your shell, so this is scary. Then there's people who have the shell, but they feel a crack in their shell. Like there's a little bit of light coming in that starts to question, maybe even just 1%, maybe life isn't the way that it's being presented to me. Maybe the news isn't the only truth. Maybe what my teachers told me isn't possible, isn't true. And you start to feel this little bit of a calling in your body. That's the crack in the shell level. The third one is you climbing out of the shell. That's when you start to practice moving from your head and seeing it before you leap to going to your heart, where you feel it and you leap before you see it. And then the fourth story is where you realize that you created the shell in your imagination, but we probably don't have that kind of time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is really me speaking to the people that are kind of at the end of their caterpillar stage and feel this calling, because a caterpillar serves just as much purpose as a butterfly, but the world supports caterpillars, and we need to also support the cocoons and butterflies of the world, because you have a feeling in you. And if this resonates with you, I'm just saying, listen to that more, and don't check in with your caterpillar friends about what you should do, because they can't feel the thing you're feeling. And one thing butterflies love to do is yell at caterpillars to fly. And caterpillars are like, I don't have wings or know what you're talking about, but you know what you're talking about because you have wings. And so that's who I'm talking to. I'm here in support of the butterflies of the world, and say for the people that are ready, we got to fly now, because this world's going to fall apart if we ignore this calling.
Absolutely. You know, you're talking about true authenticity, and I hope I screw this up. You mentioned that we need to be truly authentic with one another. Where does that inauthenticity gene come from?
I think we've trained ourselves that we're always in a place of lack. So we need to say whatever we need to say to get something. And very few people actually say the thing they're thinking. And they don't understand that if they said that, they would open so many more doors for themselves in life. So for instance, I say this in the book, but if I got on an elevator and a woman I'm really attracted to walks on the elevator, immediately what we think is, I'm trying to think of something to say to this person. Now, what if you looked at the person and just said, I'm trying to think of something to say to you?
Mm.
That's the truth. That's so open and authentic. Now, some women might not like that. They might leave. Well, good. I'm glad you said your truth, so that you'll only create a space to align with the right people that align with your truth. Most of us don't say the thing we're thinking. We instead say what we think people want to hear. So we live in a world where we get on the elevator, see the person we're attracted to, and say something we actually might not care about that much. Like, that sure is sunny outside. And then And then she's like, yes, and it was raining yesterday. And now both of you are being completely inauthentic and not quite saying what's true to you. And this is the person you're going to marry.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. We start off just totally not saying what we really feel and instead try to create the right presentation to get something. And by doing that, we don't realize we're presenting I'm in lack without you. So it would be a burden for you to be even near me because I'm going to create that it's your responsibility to make me happy.
Does that come from our addiction to receiving approval from others?
I think it comes from the illusion that we're not love as is. It comes from, you know, I spent a lot of last year. I sat every morning for about 2 hours a day and just sat with my eyes closed. I don't even like to call it meditation. I just sat and listened to my mind go crazy and come up with all these different thoughts. And I just became the space for those thoughts. And I realized that all those fear-based thoughts were lies. And I'm the one that's the space of love that's looking at those thoughts. And when I really learned that, I started to realize that I'm not in lack without anything and that I'm complete. And from that place, I was able to speak so much more authentically and create a space for much more authentic people to show up in my life who also did that kind of work. And so, you know, if you don't do that work, you're under the constant illusion that you're in a place of lack, which makes everything outside of you just an addiction to fill that false hole that you think you have.
Keep that thought. My guest is Kyle Cease, author of I Hope I Screw This Up, and we'll continue with that thought after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
I'm Paul George of the Indiana Pacers. When I was six, my days were spent playing basketball. When I was six, my dream was to make it to the NBA. When I was six, my mom had a stroke. So I want you to learn to spot a stroke fast. F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. S, speech difficulty. T, time to call 911. I'm Paul George. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You're bringing your daughter to a pop concert. Do you A, wear earplugs?
Isn't this fun, Dad?
I have a soft pretzel.
Or B, just roll with it.
Justin! OMG! I love you, Justin! I love you!
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Kyle Cease, author of the brand new best-selling book, I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. And before the break, you were making a thought and making a comment about these people who feel that they're in a state of lack and get addicted to that state of lack. Continue that thought.
Yeah, I think that we have trained ourselves that we get a lot of love for being in a state of lack. We've created a bunch of friends that when we get near them, we talk about our problems more than our possibilities. I mean, in a general sense, but it's very easy to just start talking about everything that's wrong. And when you go, oh, I had the worst day today, your mind, it's like Google. It goes, why did you have the worst day? And it starts to say the stuff. And then you find the right friends that will hear that problem and just be with you. And we've actually associated, I get love for being in a space of lack. You know, it's scary to step into your greatness. It's scary to do this, but we don't understand that there's a whole other group of friends also that want to support you in your power, that support you in your greatness, that will say thank you. In fact, many of the reasons why you think you can't step into your greatness is, in my opinion, the reason that we have to. So for instance, if you're like, I really want to give my gift and go to that island and go write my book, but I have a kid, to me, that's all the more reason. You know, all the more reason to step into your power and show your child that they can be, you know, invincible and powerful and infinite too. Or people go, I'd love to go just, you know, that's easy for you, Kyle. I'd love to go write a book, but I don't make money. Maybe we don't make money because we're not giving our gift. I always think to myself, do you know how much money we're losing by staying in a job we hate? Even if it pays $1,000 an hour, how much money are we losing by staying in a job that we hate? And then how much money of that are we spending on unnecessary addictions because we spend 8 hours a day at a place we hate, and then the rest of the time hating that we have to go back there or what our day was like? And so I think that we don't understand what we will lose by not shifting. And I always think of it this way. It's kind of a funny thing to say. I don't know what the universe or God necessarily specifically is on that level, but I always think if you could see the creative universe as a human being and you could see that it's physically abandoning you every time you come up with why you can't do something, your fear of abandonment would suddenly make you infinite.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? In your book, you say that addictions are devices we use to keep us from connecting with our true selves or souls.
Yes. Yeah, I believe very much that it's normal to see alcoholism, drugs, overeating as an addiction. We have, you know, commercials for that. You know, if you parents who use drugs have kids who use drugs, and if this is your brain on scrambled or whatever the commercial was.
Yeah.
And then we don't realize that there's other addictions. Controlling people is an addiction. Worrying is an addiction. Stopping, just coming up with why things aren't possible is an addiction. And the reason is because it's also just anything that stops you from connecting to the infinite flow of what you are. And I really believe on the core level that we're not even addicted to things. What we're addicted to is thinking, being in the past and the future. And we're addicted to that because we're ignoring our calling. So if you hear a calling in your body that says, go do this thing, and you ignore it, now your mind has to make sense of why you're not doing it. I have a rule with myself that if I'm justifying why I'm keeping something, then it's not my highest thing, right? Like if you say, well, this job does give me a medical, or this job, whatever, or, you know, this person is really nice with that one thing, you're mentally justifying why you're keeping something because your body doesn't want to keep it. And you got to make sense of why you're ignoring that calling. And so I have a rule that if I'm just like, there's my team is magic. My team is Carrie and Dan and Chris and Kara. And by the way, our team's name, how weird is this? Kyle, Kylie, Sarah, Kara, Carrie, Chris, and Christy, and Dan. Dan's like the Y when you're listing vowels. But so it's funny though, because everyone on my team is magic. And you'll never hear me justify why they work with me. You'll never hear me say, you know, well, Carrie's great at this, but it's just natural for me to work with them. And if I said something like justifying it, then I'm trying to come up with why I'm ignoring what my body's telling me it wants to do. And I truly believe that the only reason we have an addiction is it gets you into the moment, you know. And if you comprehended through doing the actual work of meditating and following your calling and letting go of the heavy things in your life, you would discover that you are the moment. And an addiction just feels like a contract, like you contracting. And when you understand you are the moment, you lose a lot of those addictions. Your need to control others goes away because you don't feel you're in lack. Your need to worry goes away because you don't feel that you're in lack if this thing goes wrong. You end up doing things better as you just connect to yourself more. So the byproduct is all these mental addictions fall off as you keep connecting to yourself.
Absolutely. You know, Teddy Roosevelt said, when you've got them by the balls, their hearts and minds will follow. But Kyle C. says, the mind doesn't always follow the heart. Please explain.
I'm trying to remember how I said it. So I notice that when I work with people at our events, we have people come up on the stage and they almost always reach this place where they get really excited in their body and scared in their head, because it's birth for their story and their truth, and it's death to their old story. You know, if you think who you are is a caterpillar, then going into the cocoon means death. But if you think you're a butterfly, but in a caterpillar's body, then going into the cocoon means birth. And whenever you feel a calling in your body, it's also death to your mind. And until you step into the calling in your body, your mind will fight every way it can, because it's tricking itself into thinking that who you are is the old story. So this is death to who you are. Ooh. So for instance, if you're someone who thinks that you're someone who makes, I don't know, let's say you think who you are as someone who makes $20,000 a year. Okay, just to give a measurable example. So for the last 20 years, you've created the story, who I am is someone who makes $20,000 a year. Well, if someone offers you $1 million, that's death to the story of who you are. So you might sabotage it, because it's death to your old story. This is why a lot of lotto winners that win instant money often go broke, because they got a lot of love and have a big story that who they are is that other story. So to have $1 million totally rewires their belief of who they are, and it's too extreme, and they might worry that their parents won't love them, they might worry that their friends will leave them, or suddenly the other friends will come, so they sabotage it. This happens all the time. You might think who you are as a victim of someone cheated on you 10 years ago, so that's why you can't date, you know? And then you create that story, and if someone tries to help you with that story, you might sabotage it because you've created an association to that limitation. And we are obsessed with staying in the game of our limited story because we're under the illusion that who we are is our past. But if you comprehend you're just this moment, you can transcend the story of your past. And most of us, what we do is we sabotage where we are so that we can overcome it and come back up to the same mediocre level we started at. So often our mind comes up with a sabotaging thought. You'll be on your way to a job interview and your mind goes, what if you throw up on the desk?
Yeah.
And then you start to motivate yourself out of the story that it just created. But if you comprehend that you're just the space looking at it, then you don't even believe that story is possible, and you transcend it and you move way beyond the old story, and you realize you're just infinite change all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's been said that 90% of success is just showing up, but you say in addition to showing up, you have to stay in the room. How do we avoid running out of the room?
That's so true, because you can't see the exponential growth that'll happen from staying in the room. So for instance, if I decided I'm going to meditate, okay, it's very often that the first 5 minutes is just chaos. It's your mind scared to death that it's doing it wrong, right? Your mind is constantly sabotaging and it's doing everything it can to not die. So you might look 5 minutes into it and you might trick yourself into thinking the next hour is going to be like the first 5 minutes. But what happens if you stay in the room? You might get 6-7 minutes in and feel something break away, or feel a breakthrough, or feel a new possibility and connect to your body a little more. And when you do that, all of a sudden you let go a little bit. And what I've discovered is, especially with meditation, it's always about 48 minutes that I hit this magic place where all these thoughts suddenly are gone and all these scared, sabotaging parts of me leave. And it's almost always 48 minutes lately. I don't know what it is, but at 48 minutes, it's totally different. But most of us don't stay in the room. So if you're trying to write a book, you write for 5 minutes and it's not coming through, but try to go 2 hours. Stay in the room for 2 hours and see what happens. Most of us go 5 minutes, then we go, it's not working. Then we go to Starbucks or call up our ex or something. And then we go back to starting from this fear-based place again. But if you just stay in the room, eventually creativity will show up. And eventually what happens is the creativity will create through you. And that's what happened with the book. That was totally true, that I started writing the book from a totally scared place. And then by the time I got to chapter 4 or 5, the book was writing me.
I got to say, your book is not only inspiring, but it's really funny. And it's truly a fearless reflection of your mind that's like a stream of consciousness. Did anyone try to talk you out of that style?
I don't think so. I think people really liked that I was saying that. I mean, I don't believe that me coming across as, I don't believe in being a guru. I think that it's our job to present our problems too and our challenges and remind people that we all have these things and not try to be someone that has the answers, that I'm looking for them as I go. But I think the first thing to say is that I was totally freaking out when I wrote chapter one, and I delayed it for 3 years. And, you know, I kept trying to start over, and I kept thinking, oh, if I bring a friend or if I do it over here. And so finally, the beginning of chapter one, my truth was, I'm scared to death. So I just started telling them that, and that started freeing it. And no one just says the thing they're thinking, you know, if you're nervous, say you're nervous. The audience goes, I know what nerves feel like, and I can connect with you. So it's just so much easier than we think it is. And instead of trying to write the right book to get sales, I just shared exactly what I was thinking and wrote it like it was a diary.
Authentic, real, and funny. It's called I Hope I Screw This Up, How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. Kyle Cease, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and also about your Evolving Out Loud presentations that are coming up.
Yes. They can get it anywhere because I'm thrilled to say it's doing really well. So they can get it at Amazon. They can go to Barnes & Noble. They can get it at any bookstore. You can also go to KyleCease.com. My last name is spelled C-E-A-S-E, like ceasefire. So KyleCease.com/book. And you can see a 2-hour concert film kind of movie for free. If you buy the book, you can type the order number into the website, and we give you instantly a 2-hour movie from my talks of me shifting someone who hadn't been in a relationship for years and all these different things. So they can go there. And then Evolving Out Loud is our event where we go on tour all the time. We're going to be in New York, Milwaukee, Austin, Seattle, L.A., everywhere. It's all over the place. So we're...
May 19th, you're going to be at the Seattle Moore Theater in Seattle, and May 27th and 28th at the Alex Theater in Glendale, California. Oh, Kyle, this has been wonderful, and I have to ask you, I know you're going to write another one of these books, and I need you to come back again and be with us because you are just a delight. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I had such a great time with you. You have a great show. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.